Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the Internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to The Bigger Picture, my favorite show where we take a fresh breath of air away from the news on, as I referred to it, from Planet of the Apes. And we talk about things that are important, our spirituality and our spiritual journey, with my excellent co-host, Michael Rachia, who, by the way, get over to his website, josephspeaks.com. I've sent so many of you directly to his site to order his books. And I will tell you, Michael, that a lot of people that have ordered your books, they don't just buy one or two, they buy them all and they love them.
That's great. Thank you, Maria.
No, thank you, because I have so many new students and it's like, you know what? I need you to read this guy's work so I don't have to waste time explaining all this to you. I says, he's got it all written down. Just buy all his books and get back to me. So you really do me a big favor so you can thank Joseph for me.
I will indeed.
Anyway, one of the things I wanted to start the show with, I don't know if you've seen the story. I know you've been busy with your latest book, but it's one of the big stories out there, actually, just this week. It's about a 18-month-old baby who was trapped in a submerged vehicle where her mom died in Utah in the United States. The baby was trapped in a submerged vehicle for 14 hours. Four policemen and a couple of firemen came to the scene. They didn't even know the car was underwater. And two of the rescuers heard what did not sound like a child's voice say, "Help me inside that car. Help me."
Yes.
And they were able to find the car, find the baby, who miraculously didn't suffer any severe injuries. When I posted that story, I said, this is further proof that the soul does not inhabit only the inside of a body. But I wanted your idea on that.
Yes, I feel that the body, and Josie says that the body is merely a point of view. It's not all that we are. And we know in dream times and in sleep state that we can contact other people and they can recognize us. Very often we've had examples of people seeing their mothers and fathers or spouses at night, coming across the room towards them and then disappearing. Mm-hmm. Or they hear someone's voice at a time of peril, at a time when they're in great stress. So yeah, we're just an assembly point as far as the earthly personality is concerned. It's a point of view from which we can experience the earth. But it's not, of course, as you quite rightly say, all that we are. We're a great deal more than that, and we're capable of a great deal more than that. And we are connected to everything and to everyone. It's just that at times of stress, sometimes that becomes apparent on a material level when it usually isn't.
Right. Well, to me, just the fact that the voice was not in the baby's voice, I should think that the soul is not going to speak as a baby if the soul is out saying, save that body, I'm not done with it yet.
The soul has to go through due process, of course, on Earth. That point of view has to mature from a child into a young adult and then an adult and then an older person and then the point of physical departure from this realm. But the soul is so much more than that. And so you'd expect that the voice, the verbalization of the soul, to be something with a lot more gravitas behind it.
Right.
And of course they would have heard that voice within their own souls. I don't think for a moment that it actually vibrated the air and had an impact on their physical ears. I think they would have heard it from their point of view, from their God point of view, soul to soul, as it were.
Right. Well, the way the articles were written, they were pretty freaked out because they couldn't figure out where the voice had come from to tell them, help me.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know if you've read Edgar Casey, or I'm sure you're familiar with his work. Edgar Casey, you know, was a great seer, you know, probably 100 years ago in America.
Yes, indeed.
And one of the things I remember from my early reading of his work, he said that he fully believed that a soul doesn't physically lock into a body until it's 21 years old, that it has the ability to go in and out at will.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know, I'm not sure that we ever fully lock into this physical body. I think we lock more and more into our perception of being physical as we grow older. But I'm sure that we do move about spiritually, and most of the time don't sense that. I have on occasion done rescue work in that I've been called to the scene of an incident involving souls who need to move on and have been requested to say something to them on behalf of the guides that are around me so that they can move on. And I've actually done that between 1 minute and the next.
Right.
I've been doing something 1 minute, and then the next minute I know that there's a gap. I know that I've exited this world in consciousness, as it were, and entered the spiritual worlds. And then later I've had full recollection of what's happened. So we're not as glued to this physical body as we'd like to think we are.
Right.
I don't think we're ever completely enveloped by it, as it were, or centered in it. And I think that's one of the things that we need to examine in progressing our spirituality.
Right.
Through meditation and through quiet times, realizing that we do reach out. We are greater than our earthly perceptions. And that we can connect to other people remotely. And we can connect to the spiritual realms remotely when we need to and want to.
Right. I'm sure everybody listening to the show has had an opportunity or a moment where they're talking to their loved one or their husband, wife, friend, and the friend goes what I call into the zone, and you say to them, hey, where'd you go?
Yes.
I would think that that's where you go. You know, you hear about these people that say they were abducted or whatever, and they always report lost time. Well, where did they go?
Yes. And that there is a peculiar sense of lost time. For example, if you go out at night, if you go out and do spiritual work at night and go to one of the spiritual realms, when you come back, there's not that feeling that you've been dreaming, which seems to still be on the physical clock, as it were. There's a feeling of exiting completely this world and coming back, and there being, as you say, a gap,
right,
a void.
Right.
In your earthly perception, because you have gone over to a spiritual perception and then come back again.
Absolutely. And, you know, for me, this has always been my defense, I guess you can call it defense, when, and especially, you know, sometimes it's very disappointing to me to see other supposed spiritual teachers defending women not having abortion rights, defending that the soul and the embryo, the fetus, is alive and shouldn't be, you know, destroyed, the soul. But to me, it's always like, okay, if we have this big, gigantic, omnipotent soul, of which probably less than 0.1% puppets our little human body around while we're here, why would you choose to be trapped in such a confined, small space for 9 months? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, we are so much more than we appear to be. We're not the small perception of ourselves. It's just initially it was an area so that we could recognize others and they could recognize us as we were traveling through this physical plane. But of course, things got distorted after the fall, which we've talked about in depth in other shows. And we became locked into this perception of ourselves whilst we're awake here. And you can see how we relate to ourselves increasingly as this physical mass, that we have to keep the body alive at all costs. We have to keep the mind alive at all costs. And in medicine, we rarely consider that there is a spiritual aspect to the patient.
Right.
And so we treat the body and we treat the mind almost Frankenstein-like to keep them alive at all costs, whilst perhaps not considering the spiritual well-being and the spiritual aspect of the person.
I agree. Well, you know, now with all these new computer inventions and transhumanism on deck, they're coming out with a way to download, basically download your entire brain and memories into a fake head or computer so that your mind and your memories can continue on forever. To me, I look at that and I say, I would not want that. I mean, wouldn't that kind of trap your soul to this plane, to this earth plane?
It is trapping us within a further illusion. I have a thing about cell phones, Maria.
I feel too.
That they are something that traps us within a further illusion. And I think they are an effect of technology being manipulated by the field, which is set to negative, which is set to keeping us in the mindset that we have at the moment. And you see people who don't see anything except that little screen for most of their day.
Right.
And then you're talking about something even further than that, where you're attempting to trap the actual physical essence, which is only one part of our spiritual journey, in a mechanical device. It's a nightmare.
I know. It would be my worst nightmare. I'm like, when I leave this planet, I want to leave 100% intact. Everything's got to go. You know,
And also, when you leave this planet, not to be associated with those aspects of your personality that were simply a suit of clothes, but to take with you the higher aspects of yourself, the aspects of yourself that you have refined and graduated to a higher plane whilst you were here, not the troublesome personality. You don't want to still be upset about the neighbours across the street or, you know, the taste of beer because you can't have it anymore. Mm. It's ludicrous.
Right.
When clothes wear out on Earth, we get rid of them, we get some new clothes.
Right.
We don't hang on to them threadbare and say, no, these are the only clothes I ever want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
We have to understand that there's more to us and that there's opportunity ahead of us. And we don't look for that opportunity. We think that this is all there is, that this 9-to-5 world is all there is. And it's becoming increasingly so in our perception of ourselves, and that's a dangerous thing. Technology is great if it's used the right way, but at the present time it's being used, I see on many occasions, to trap us within a further illusion. So not only can we not escape the illusion of being here, but we bury ourselves in a further illusion, making it doubly hard to appreciate that we are spiritual beings and that this is only one part of an infinite journey.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I agree with you. It's like being in an illusion inside an illusion and getting trapped in a further illusion, thinking it's reality. You know, and I look at all these wearables that are coming out, you know, technology that you wear on your person. Implants they want to put in your brain so you can command your computer directly from your brain, body parts, etc. And, you know, to me, all I can think of is history repeating itself and the stories and legends of Atlantis.
Yes, absolutely. It is sinking us further and further and further into just the material aspect of what we are. And glorifying the material aspect of what we are. And saying that we need these things. Mm-hmm. We need the phone. We need the television. We need the technology around us. What we need to do is recognize that we are each a part of the other. And recognize that we are each a part of God. And start to live our lives here spiritually. Because we may have the technology that looks very fancy and all these new toys around us. But we haven't progressed one jot with regard to how we relate to and treat each other. And that's what's important. And the technology is taking that further away from us, the consideration of that further away from us. We don't care about each other. We care about the phone. We care about the television. We care about the car.
Right, right. I know, you see it in public. Everybody's all busy texting away or on their gadgets. And, you know, they could be sitting at a restaurant having dinner and there's no conversation going on. You know, it's kind of interesting. A week or so ago, I was with my granddaughter, and we were out at a restaurant, and we were sitting across from each other, and we were gabbing away the whole time, just talking like a million miles a minute. And she looked at me and she said, Grandma, everybody's like staring at us. And I said, what? And she says, yeah, probably because we're having so much conversation. So we now are the odd ducks in a world where everybody is quiet and everybody is isolated.
Yes. Our technology is supposed to bring us closer to people around the world, and we're getting further and further away from each other. How many of us go next door to check on the neighbor? How many of us enjoy, as you say, the communion in a restaurant between, you know, the people who are having the meal together? It's strange to see couples there, each with a mobile phone, eating soup with one hand and texting with the other. Why do they bother being with each other?
I agree.
What is that about?
I find it extremely rude. I mean, just yesterday, one of my friends says, you really have to get a cell phone. And I just looked at him and says, no, I really don't, okay? I don't want that interruption in my life.
Yes.
And I don't know how people can't see it the way that I see it, okay? If I'm in my car, I want to listen to music. I want to sing out loud. It's the only place anybody can take my singing voice is in my car. You know, I don't want to be bothered if I'm out to dinner. You know, these are ugly interruptions. What? There's nothing so important. I can't wait till I get home.
And I think it's a very important point you brought up there, Maria, in that we are filling up any space that we have left in our lives with noise and with clutter. And because we're doing that, there isn't the time to consider our spirituality. There isn't the time to commune with the God within. There isn't the time to become quiet and ask the big questions of ourselves, such as, who are we really? Mm-hmm. Why are we here? How do we relate to other people? What are our goals in life? Do we consider an afterlife? What do we know about an afterlife? But all those potential, all those potentialities to explore ourselves and our connection to each other and to God are becoming lost in noise, in confusion. There are people who charge their phones every night and look at their phones every hour to see if they've been texted by someone.
Every hour. I see them looking every minute. It's very annoying, and I find it extremely rude.
It is extremely rude. We have to consider and give our full attention to the person who's in front of us. We have to honor the person in front of us as the spirit, as the equal that they really are. And we're not doing that. Well, we have to get back to a time where there is some time in each day to consider what we want as spirits, to tune in to our greater perceptions, to tune into that greater world we talked about earlier, the greater soul, to tune into the God within, and to listen for once in our lives, to listen, not to text, not to talk, but to listen and see what the God within is saying to us. See what our greater perceptions, our greater senses are saying to us about how we should relate to ourselves and how we should relate to others. We have this mobile phone, if you like, that's within us. And that mobile phone is a true friend.
Absolutely.
Because if we dial up the God connection within, we get the answers to all the challenges that come to us in life. Those challenges that we look to everybody else to solve, we can solve ourselves. And in the right way. But we have to take the time to do it, and we're not at the moment.
Right. Well, I told you before we got on air today, you know, I've always had that inner mobile phone, especially when it comes to my children or my grandchildren. I can sense them. I can sense when they're happy. I can sense when an accident happens. And then I can pick up a regular phone and call them. Okay. I've been able to have conversations with people without even opening our mouths. I mean, just with our eyes and our facial language. That's how close we are. But I think that a lot of people today are afraid of the quiet. They're afraid to go within. They're afraid to look at themselves. They're afraid to think.
Absolutely. If they're in the quiet, then they have to consider. Then they have to think. And the thing that most people think about and are afraid about is the fact that they're getting older. It's the fact that they are going to go somewhere. They're not going to beat the system.
Mm-hmm.
If they do, they'll be the first human being that ever has done so.
Right.
They are going to die. It's a fact. We have to face it.
Right.
We're going to die as physical beings. So we have to investigate what comes next. And in investigating what comes next, you find that there is a great comfort, that physical death is nothing but stepping through a doorway into another existence. And you find that there is a wonderful world that can heighten your senses and connect you to people in a way that you've never felt before, simply by investigating it. But we have to be brave enough to investigate it. And then, of course, the fear falls away as we discover our spiritual core and our connection to God.
Right. Well, I'm going to put in a cheap plug for your book, Your Life After Death, which I think everybody should read. Everybody. It's the absolute best book to explain all of what we're talking about. And I can't tell you how many of my own students and clients I have told, get this book and read it. Call me when you've finished reading it. You know? Why have the conversation when you have it all out there so succinctly, you know? Anyway, I got a whole bunch of questions from people. Some of them are subscribers. Some of them, you know, have heard us talk, and they're obviously huge fans of yours. And they have really good questions. This is from a man named Keith in Ireland. He said, just in relation to spirit guides, I wonder if Michael could shine a little light on how it's decided what guides are assigned to people to keep an eye on them while they're here in this incarnation. And do many people return here out of love for others as opposed to just being trapped in the illusion? So I guess it's two parts. So I guess the first part is, how is it decided what guides are assigned to people while they're here?
I feel it's a matter, certainly I can only speak from my own perspective, I feel it's a matter in many cases that those guides are part of our group soul. That is to say that they are part of the greater spiritual family that we are truly a part of. And I feel that that is necessary in a guide being with us, because that guide has got similar hopes and outlooks to the ones that we will exhibit during our physical life. Mm-hmm. I've had guides that have been with me since birth, and a couple of guides have said, we've been with you since before birth, and I guess that is always the case. And I don't think we come here unprotected, and I don't think we come here alone, and I don't think we're just thrown into this landscape, and it's expected that we fend for ourselves.
Right.
We have ammunition. We have the right people around us. And those guides have been a part of our lives for a long, long time. I also feel that sometimes the guides are on the spiritual side and they are coaching us, as it were, or inspiring us. And in other incarnations, they are the ones who are on Earth and we are coaching them.
Mm.
So it's a cyclic thing, but I think it's a family thing. I think it needs to be a family thing because we are each unique and our soul group has a unique vibration to it, and that vibration understands us as only family can understand us.
Mm.
So I think those spirit guides have to come from that family in order to attempt to bring out of us evolution for ourselves and therefore for them when we get back to the spiritual realms that we've come from.
I think that's well answers the question. You know, people ask me that, especially as a Reiki master, and I explain to my students when they're getting their attunements in Reiki that each level provides you with a new guide or several that are Reiki masters in spirit. And they will correct anything that the person thinks they're doing wrong when they're practicing their healing art. So there are specific guides also that come and go in our lives, depending on whether we need them at that point in our life or not.
Yes, absolutely. But we have sort of traveling guides, don't we? There are people who turn up in my life that perhaps delivered a couple of lectures and then have disappeared. Or there have been people who have said, I will stay with you during this chaotic event and make sure that you come through it in the correct way. And that's happened on a number of occasions.
Right.
And the biggest example I have of a guide who is not a guide for me is Joseph.
Uh-huh.
Joseph is not one of my guides. I think it's a popular misconception that he is a guiding influence in my life. He isn't. He's a connection to me in order to guide everyone else's life.
Mm-hmm.
And that connection was set up a long time ago.
Right.
It was set up a couple of incarnations ago, as far as I was concerned.
Right. I would assume it's a friendship. more than anything. This is probably a friend of yours from a long time ago who you two made an agreement that you would do this particular lifetime together.
Yes, yes. So his specific purpose is not to guide me, but is to connect with me and through me to guide others. So as you quite rightly say, guides have different functions, and you have a core set of guides who are family, and then other people who are attracted to situations that you find yourself in during the physical life because they feel that they can help mm-hmm. and will connect to you for a time in order to see you through and inspire you through certain sets of circumstances which, once resolved to their satisfaction and yours, they then move away from and will connect to someone else.
Right. And some of them, you know, their job is just to protect you. Sometimes you just have a pretty... Listen, I got to tell you a story, Michael. I know as an Italian, you're going to enjoy it. my life has been threatened since I was about 15 years old. And the very fact that I'm still alive is like a miracle, okay? But, you know, many people, you know, of different persuasions have actually physically seen my guides around me. And some of them are in awe over, like, I must have like an army of guides around me at different times. But a few years back, I got to interview on my show the niece of Al Capone.
Oh, gosh.
And I did, and she wrote a fabulous book about her uncle. And what I realized through the book was that Al Capone was extremely intuitive and psychic, which is how he ducked the cops on so many occasions. And his niece, Deidre, she also was a bit on the gifted side. And for many years now, because I see that a lot of people that have tried to murder me or come against me in many different vicious ways, Michael, have been taken out, okay, just taken out of the equation. They're either off the planet or they're gone. So I had said to her, I really believe that your uncle and his gang are my spirit guides.
That's wonderful.
And you know what she said to me? Maria, that's great. I believe it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I'd love to see him with you, Maria. That'd be great.
I'm sure he pals around me and gets a kick out of me. Because I tell people, I'm sure Mother Mary's not one of my guides. It's just not my energy. My energy doesn't relate to the angelic realm. But just a funny little side story, and just so my listeners know, I still have that interview with Deidre Capone in my archives, so you guys can go in and listen to it. All right, let's get to the second half of Keith's question.
Can you remind me, Maria?
Yeah, of course. I almost forgot. I have it in front of me, so I'm kind of cheating. He says, do many people return here out of love for others as opposed to just being trapped in this illusion?
And the answer to that is yes. And what were we thinking?
Right.
What were we thinking? Again, you can only quote from your own perspective, but the way that my life has formed itself, I would not in my 20s or 30s have said that I came here specifically to do what I'm doing.
Right.
But it's become apparent in the last decade, as a feeling through meditation, that that is exactly what I've done. I've come here specifically to put out this information, to put out this information into the world again, as has my other half, Jane, mm-hmm. and as has David, who puts the books together, and Tony, who is a great support via the Sanctuary of Healing. And our paths crossed specifically so that we could put the books together and get the information out. And so, yes, and I'm sure that you did the same thing, Maria.
I know.
You came here saying... Because it sounds so great on that side. They say, would you like to go back? You say, oh, yes, no problem. Mm. Piece of cake.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be great. And then you get here, and as we've said many times, you think, what was I thinking?
Right. How many times have I told you when I get back into spirit, I'm going to kick my own ass for coming here? I'm going to give myself a beating. I'll take a wooden spoon to myself.
But, of course, there are many people across the globe, particularly at this time when we seem to be sinking deeper into the illusion, who are incarnating specifically to attempt to get us out of that illusion. Mm-hmm. And there are many temptations, because the field knows that these spirits are incarnating. There are many temptations that attempt, many situations that attempt to take these kind light souls away from the mission that they're supposed to do. Many distractions. You must have seen, as I've seen, great potential in people mm-hmm. that then gets extinguished because the field envelops them. Uh-huh. I think it's important to say to the listeners, please, as you send out the light to the world, mm. also in particular, send the light out to those people who are attempting to bring through spiritual truth, or attempting to break through the darkness of this world and restore it and mm-hmm. you to what you and we once were. They need your help. They need your light.
Right.
Surround them as their guides surround them, and let's pray that their missions are successful.
Absolutely. You know, I've been blessed with having a lot of the millennial generation come to me as students that actually want me to teach them, you know, my spirituality, you know, what I know, the magic. I call it the magic. And I have this one fabulous student. She's probably 30. And she's been going along really well, but our last session, she just started crying. And she said she didn't know why she was crying. And I, of course, allow people to feel what they feel. And I looked at her, and of course, I could sense it was her fear. Her fear is now coming up that she can blend her spirituality with her work, but she's afraid of what her clientele will think of her. So I'm working with her to get her past that, because yeah. she really is gifted. And I mean, I've seen kids in their 20s, you know, they're still late teens, who are so gifted that they make us look like we're from caveman days. So for me, it's a thrill to be able to teach and work with these young people.
Yes.
And I think they're the generation to bust through this barrier, that's for sure.
Yeah. And it's great that you're doing this teaching work, Maria, because that's another problem that these incarnating souls have, in that there isn't a great caliber of teaching that allows them to examine and understand and develop their spiritual and their psychic gifts.
Right.
That's a split. And we have to send out light and ask for suitable teachers for the younger souls, younger in that they've incarnated after us. So that they've got a rock-steady platform on which they can build.
Absolutely.
I was very lucky, but I don't think luck really had anything to do with it, in that I had one of the best teachers that ever was. A lady who was nothing to do with organized religion, but was everything to do with spirituality, and was self-taught in her own home. She'd sat by herself. She'd understood trance. She'd understood spirit communication. She'd examined it to the nth degree, and then through discipline, and she was very disciplined, which I believe is an extremely important part of what we do, she passed on that information over a number of years to me. And this goes back, there's sort of a link to what we've been saying before, to us being part of the same soul family. Because both she and I independently had vivid memories of a life that we spent in Germany, in a last incarnation, where we had three children. I could describe the house, as could she, down to the curtains and the furnishings we had, independently of each other. And on one particular morning, I was in my 30s, I think I've told you this story before, I'll cut it short, but we came out, got into a carriage, the three children were in the back, we went along a mountain road, there was a thunderstorm, the carriage overturned, and we got up and had passed, all of us. And the reason that we were together for that short amount of time was so that we could make that physical connection, so that in this life, she could teach me. So that we could find each other, and she could teach me.
Well, that's I don't find that story odd at all, because a lot of my students, you know, they say they've seen me, physically seen me in their living room in broad daylight, talking to them. And then they, you know, but through happenstance, find me and show up. And, you know, to me, listen, I like all the things I do for, you know, my work. Otherwise, I wouldn't do them. But there's nothing more pleasing to me than to teach somebody one-on-one. Nothing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, that's available, and it's available to a lot, you know, to anybody listening to this show. But they have to want to do it. Now, this lady you're talking about, wouldn't you say that even though she was in a physical body in this lifetime too, that she too was one of your spirit guides?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And it was specifically designed that she incarnate before me so that she could guide me at the point at which I was ready to understand the spiritual gifts that I'd come here with. Mm. Yes. And I remember there was instant recognition with her.
Right.
I was actually sitting in an open circle. The medium was a friend of mine, a gentleman, and she walked in. She wasn't in that circle for a few weeks, and she walked in, and I instantly recognized her. Mm. And I instantly said to myself, I know that lady. She's a nurse. Now, I'd never met her before. We got talking, and she had been a nurse during the Second World War. And she told me later on that I'd been visiting her house for many years, and there was an incident that proved it, which I might have told you before. Stop me if I'm going to...
No, I don't remember you telling me this.
Okay. I was in dire circumstances a few decades ago in that a tooth had cracked in my head in half.
Oh.
I was in considerable pain, and at the time I was living with my parents, and there was an upstairs dormer bedroom that hadn't been properly insulated, and it was freezing up there. And so I was sat up in bed in pyjamas and a waistcoat on top of that, and on top of that, a green woolly hat that I'd borrowed from someone. And this was during the night. And when I felt better, I went for my usual visit to see Joan, my teacher, and she said a funny thing happened the other night. She said, you came in, you came through the wall, and I don't know what it was, but you appeared to have a green thought form around your head.
I guess that was your hat.
It was at that point that I knew what she'd been saying to me, that I'd been visiting her house since I was a boy, was correct.
Right, and you know what? A lot of people will have those experiences in the dream state, and yet they choose to ignore their dreams, which I think is the most important spiritual information you get is during the dream space when your body is down and relaxed and you can actually travel and meet and greet.
Absolutely. We should take notice of the symbols or the direct images that we get during our dream state. And I think you'll agree, Maria, that when we have a psychic dream, there's a greater realism to it than the normal sorting out of garbage that our brain needs to do in order to stay sane.
Right.
There's an enhanced, an HD quality to it, if you will.
Oh, yeah, it's like a full Technicolor.
Sorry?
It's like in full Technicolor 3D.
It is indeed, yeah. And those are the things that we need to take notice of, because we're either speaking to ourselves or someone else is speaking to us during the night. And you must have had lots of occasions, as I have, where you've been told something during the night and it's happened the following day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I pay close attention to my dreams. Always have.
Yes.
Right. Michael, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, we have lots more questions from some of your fans. So stay with us. Michael and I will be right back.
Spiritual Professor is a name some of Maria's students and clients refer to her as. After a consultation or class with Maria, some have gone as far as calling her the Force or the Oracle. Maria is simply a woman, a mother, and grandmother who was born with a keen natural intuition. She's got a lot of life experience, and she's a constant student herself. This is what qualifies her to help those who are on their journey and need some direction. Some students visit her in person, others on the phone or on Skype. Maria will work with you on your own timeline, guiding you down your best possible path. You can learn to balance the mind, body, and spirit in what seems to be a world gone mad. As David Icke says about Maria, Maria's the real deal, extremely intuitive but with her feet firmly on the ground. Out there, but down here, no bullshit. Whatever you need in this part of your journey is what Maria will help you with. She'll give you the tools you need to make the rest of your life the best of your life. See private consultations with Maria on the site at meria.net and pick the one that resonates with you. You are not alone. The professor is in at maria.net. Now back to the show.
Okay, welcome back to The Bigger Picture with myself and my excellent co-host, Michael Rechia. Check out his work at josephspeaks.com. There's a live link right here. And we can all be excited because, Michael, you just finished another book. It's in the editing stage. I'm so excited. I can't wait to read it.
Yes, it's. I can almost make the same statement, Maria, because every time Jane passes over a chapter that she's edited to me to look at, it's the first I know about it. Obviously, I know that I've sat with the Band of Light over the past 2 years.
Right.
And we've had 18 sessions, 18 trance sessions. But what Joseph has been talking about, I'm the last one to know in the group.
Right. I understand that.
As well.
I totally understand that. You know, when I read for people, you know, and just tap into their Akashic records and tell them what's there, when they get back in touch with me, it could be months or years later, they're like, do you remember saying this and that? And I'm like, no, it's not for me to keep that information. You know, I don't remember that. Imagine if I had to remember everybody's story, my head would have exploded a long time ago. I would have just ran out of room. Right. It comes through you and you give it out. You're just the messenger. And people sometimes just don't seem to get that.
Yeah, there's no conscious memory of it.
Right.
Because we haven't lived through it.
Right, unless, believe me, you're really having quite a spectacular life, you know, something so unusual that it's actually going to stick out in my head. No, I'm not going to remember it. All right, let's take a question from Patricia. She says, when Joseph says to surround all our life experiences with light, whether we perceive them to be positive or negative, is he saying that actually they are neither?
He's saying that what we need to bring out of our experience here are the spiritual aspects of what we've done. And yes, Joseph would always say that there's no good or bad, there is simply experience. But why he's saying that we need to surround our life experiences and infuse our life experiences with light is so that we escape from the lower aspects of having been here. So many people go over, and if they are not sufficiently spiritually aware, they find themselves drawn into another incarnation because aspects of those lives that they have just lived pull them back. They're the only things that they can focus on. You know, we've often said whether it's the beer or the sex or the money or the business or the relationships, they have focused so much of their time on the material, on the physical, on the mental, that they find it very difficult to shift their perspective once they get to the spiritual side and consider that there is another path, that there's a path through the cleansing spheres and out and back into the angelic host and back into infinity. And so Joseph is saying, yes, infuse your life experiences. Don't give them a value as being positive or negative, but infuse them with light so that what you remember from them as a spirit when you go over is their effect on you with regard to your spiritual progression and evolution. And then you can see, you can sort out the trash, what is not of any use to you any longer, from the gold, from the jewels, from those bright aspects that have lifted you up and prepared you for the next stage of your journey.
Right. So she's basically also saying then you don't need to judge it, or do you have to try to fix the negative?
You don't have to judge yourself. I think judging yourself is very detrimental to spiritual progress. And you have to remember that who you are right now today is not who you were at the same time yesterday. Mm-hmm. You have progressed. And so you have to let go without judging, because judging attaches you to those situations that you deem to be judgeable. You are anchoring yourself to those situations and saying, I deserve to be punished for this, or I am guilty because of that. And you have to let go of those things. So we don't judge. We have to be the observer of the passing parade of our physical life and then discard those aspects of that physical life that weigh us down.
Right.
And let go of those aspects that are no longer needed on journey. Much like that suit of clothes we were alluding to earlier on. Those aspects of yourself were just suits of clothes that you were were wearing at that particular time. Mm-hmm. And having got a buzz out of wearing those clothes, you now move on to the next experience. Mm-hmm. If something comes to you and you think, well, I don't need to act in that way anymore, then congratulations, you're progressing. Because the very fact that you know that you don't want to act in that way any longer means that you are lifting yourself spiritually. And that's not a judgment. That's simply saying, I've been through that, I've done that, it's not right for me anymore. I will now progress in a different way forwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the idea of judgment is part of this illusion, you know, the religious programming that people have. You know, that we're going to be judged. We're going to be judged by some angry God, or we're going to be judged by, you know, 144,000 or 12, you know, big creatures with long beards, or we're going to judge ourselves. So I think that's just, again, being trapped in this illusion. And I see people trapped so much in this illusion when their fear comes up. You know, because I hear a lot of people, you know, they look at the state of the world and they say, Maria, I'm just so afraid. You know, I'm afraid to go outside. You know, I'm afraid of pollution. I'm afraid of this and that. And I have to remind them that they're getting trapped in the flat, three-dimensional illusion here, the matrix.
Yes. There is never any judgment from any of the guides who come to us, and certainly never any judgment from God. So why should we judge ourselves? What are we judging?
Right.
What are we judging?
Mm-hmm.
We are simply looking at ourselves, or should simply be looking at ourselves, and saying, what am I today? How have I changed from yesterday? What do I want to put aside? What do I want to investigate? And what do I hope to become? And that's the correct passage, in my view, through life, recognizing the things that lift us up. And I think our only judgment should be, is a situation that I'm in and the way that I'm reacting to it elevating me or pulling me down?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer is it's pulling me down, then the obvious thing to do is to let that situation go and look for a new situation that doesn't pull you down.
Absolutely. And look, every day you get to start over. That's the beauty of waking up. One of the few beauties of waking back up in this dimension. I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, I'm back on Planet of the Apes. I was in such a cool place last night, but I'm back here. But you get a chance every day to start over. And let me tell you, Michael, I'm sure you understand. Without a sense of humor, you're lost on this planet.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We must have been thinking of with a like mind over the last couple of days, because I've been remembering the line by Charlton Heston from Planet of the Apes, where he shouts in the prison, it's a madhouse.
Right.
It's a madhouse.
Right.
And of course it is. And back to the sense of humor, if you can see it as a madhouse and laugh at it rather than becoming immersed and entrapped by it, then your passage through this madhouse is a lot easier to take.
Right.
To look at the ridiculousness of what we do as nations across the globe and individually, and to laugh it off, to see the humor in it. And then the aspects of that madhouse that bring other people down don't affect us in the same way.
Absolutely.
But also to recognize, of course, that it is a madhouse. No matter where you look, as you progress spiritually, more and more each day, this place will seem like an asylum.
It is.
That's what it is.
I know,
but
it is. It is. Well,
you feel that way.
We must
because be. Feeling that way,
right.
You are identifying the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, we must be on the same brainwave, because for the past few weeks when I'm doing my news show, I actually announced it as, you know, this is Maria Heller, it's 2015 and I'm reporting from Planet of the Apes. Because when you look at the news and the state of the world, how else can you see it but Planet of the Apes? It's we have devolved in the past 50 years alone. We've devolved instead of evolved as a species from everything I can see. So what else can you call it? I know you just feel like Charlton Heston in that cage screaming for sure.
And I think you're quite right. There has been this rapid devolution of the past half century in the way that we approach each other, in our levels of violence, in our self-centeredness, and that is why we need to appeal constantly for workers for the light, for people each day to give some time in that day to sending out non-judgmental, again, non-judgmental, light to areas of the world and across the world to lift people, to create enough light so that they can change from within and begin to consider their viewpoint. And to begin to consider whether what they are doing is detrimental or uplifting to the world and to each other.
Right, absolutely. For me, I just look at it as training my replacements. You know, I'm looking at the down low. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to be here forever. Sooner or later, I get freed from Planet of the Apes, but I want to leave enough little trainees or clones behind, somebody else to pick up where I left off. So that's, you know, that's how I'm spending my time. I enjoy it so much. Okay, another question, and she sent in a lot, and I can't cover them all because we only have 5 minutes left. This comes from Marina, and I think this is an interesting question. Where can we do more good, coming to Earth or staying in the cleansing spheres?
It is an excellent question.
Mm-hmm.
According to Joseph, and therefore according to me as well, because I agree with everything that he says, you do more good by staying in the cleansing spheres, by getting yourself out and being able, in a position of more light, to donate more light to the earth. Don't come back. If you come back, you reinforce those aspects of the earth that are wrong, unless, of course, you've come back specifically to teach and to spread the spiritual message.
Mm-hmm.
This is it's a ghost train. It's a roller coaster. And it's a record that is stuck in the groove. So you're coming back to repeat what you've already done ad infinitum.
Mm-hmm.
Make that choice not to come back and to investigate the life that is ahead of you in the cleansing spheres, that gradually becomes more and more and more enlightened and more and more and more blissful, with more and more and more wonderful landscapes and people around you, to the point where you escape back into your angelic heritage through that trap door, as it were, that leads to infinity.
Well, I think that pretty much answers that question. And, you know, I do know some people that I think their souls are much more effective doing healing work or whatever on the planet from the other side. You know, you know, when somebody dies, everybody says, oh, he's a he or she, she's in a better place. And there are some psychologists that say that's the wrong way to comfort people. To me, any place from here is a better place. So I don't really see anything wrong with that.
No, absolutely. They are in a better place. And you, like myself, will have seen that better place and seen various levels. And I just wish that we could reach into the mind's eye of every listener today and download what we've seen in terms of spiritual landscapes and in terms of the people in wonderful glowing robes that exhibit so much love that you can hardly bear it.
Right.
So blissful.
Exactly.
And get them to see what we've seen. If they could see what we've seen, they would instantly make that choice that at the end of this particular passage of existence, which we have to go through because we've instigated it, at the end of that particular passage of existence, they would make the choice to go on into those wonderful realms and into that wonderful harmony. Imagine a world where there isn't the violence that we have in this world, where people actually get on with each other.
Right, where technology is actually used for something good.
Yes. Yeah, and so that's what you have to... And again, I would suggest that the listeners ask that they have those visions, if they are capable psychically and spiritually, during their meditations, that will reinforce what we're saying.
Absolutely.
Don't take our word for it.
Mm-hmm.
Experience it personally.
Right.
Experience it by asking for it and then becoming quiet and seeing what comes to you.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining me today, and I can't wait to get a copy of your latest book, so I better be hot on the presses, top on your list when it's off the presses.
You actually are, Maria, so by the next time we speak, you should have a copy in your hands.
Yay! All right, well, thanks so much for joining me. We'll talk again soon, Michael.
A great delight. Take care, Maria.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Michael Rakia, check him out josephspeaks.com. Hope you enjoyed today's show. If you're listening and you're not a subscriber, please consider a subscription. You may think you're only here to know spiritual stuff, but learning everything going on this planet is part of your education, and I do that for you. I do the homework so you don't have to, and your support is always appreciated. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys on Monday.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.